Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metro podcast. I'm John. This week we are going to talk about those delightful mayoral elections again. Because, you know, I was genuinely thinking this was going to be the big story of the next few weeks in British politics. I thought maybe we're so London-centric in this country, I thought maybe it was finally the region's time to shine. And then Theresa May had to blow it all by calling for a general election. So today we're going to talk about the implications of that decision and what it's going to do to the various mayoral elections around the country. To discuss that topic, I'm joined by my colleagues from the New Statesman's Politics Desk, Stephen Bush and Patrick Maguire.
Hello.
Hello.
So, Stephen, you know, this is your second general election to cover in 3 years. It will very likely be your third Labour leadership contest in 3 years. How are you feeling about that?
I mean, obviously, I love elections, right? I just think they're brilliant, wonderful, just... Yeah, I just think we forget, unless you look at the sweep of history and the sweep of the world, right? How few people get to do the thing that we're going to get to do twice, to vote in an election. That is quite remarkable. That's something, you know, my grandfather never got to do. That's an astonishing and very beautiful thing. But the other reason why I think it's quite exciting is now it will be this kind of curtain raiser, right? If the Lib Dems do very well across those elections, which I suspect they will, you'll have an entertaining moment when the Conservatives, who will have pressed the button marked snap, gleefully looking forward to smashing the Labour Party, will suddenly go, oh, wait a second, did we really want to do this? So, I mean, if, say, the Liberal Democrats win the... I keep calling it the University of the West of England now. the West England Metro. Somerset, yeah, whatever, yeah, you want to call it, mayoralty, right? If the Lib Dems win that, and they, you know, they take... Yeah, they take full control on the South West councils they have no overall control in. If they get rid of the Tory majority in those councils, if they win the popular vote across those wards, you're going to have... You remember that outbreak of panic among Labour MPs and happened after the 2014 local elections? When they were like, oh, this isn't good. This is not what should be happening according to the polls. Yeah. Abort, abort.
We might get the Tory equivalent of that.
So I think it's suddenly become, you know, even more exciting...
It's very exciting if national politics is your bag, and it, you know, it very much is your bag. But, you know, I really thought this was going to be the moment where we started talking about cities. I thought, you know, it was going to be all West Midlands all the time was really where I was expecting to go. I really did think that was going to happen. And now, like, people will pay attention to what's going on in the West Midlands mayoral election, but only because it's now become a sort of test case for what's going on in politics more generally.
Although the West Midlands become less exciting since your wee poll.
Yeah, we'll come on to the topic of what the hell does the general election mean for the mayorals. But to explain, there was a sort of poll out yesterday which suggested that Labour's Sean Simon, after the second round... is beating Andy Street by 6 points, which is slightly below what people in his campaign are predicting, but it's kind of in the ballpark. That slightly surprised me, because that feels like a much healthier lead than I would have given them credit for at this stage.
Well, as I said yesterday, I think he's a much transfer-friendlier politician than Andy Street is, right? Because...
You mean literally the transfer of votes?
Oh, the transfer of votes, yeah. Not footballing or bank. But, you know, I think he will attract a lot more second preferences than Andy Street. And I think maybe the, you know, continued resurgence of May on everyone's TV screens will remind people that Andy Street, for all his kind of trying to do a non-partisan campaign, sort of focusing on his being a technocrat, is actually still a Tory, although that could well work in his favour.
That would be my concern, is that this is the general election is going to raise the political temperature more generally, and it means that people are going to be going into the voting booth thinking not about the West Midlands or trams or the privatisation of the M6 toll streets. They're going to be thinking about Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn and which of those two politicians they like more. And as vexing as it may seem to me, people do seem to quite like Theresa May.
Yes, but and I hope this doesn't turn out to be a wrong prediction, because I'll be very upset if this, Theresa May's not going to get 50% of the vote plus one. And I think the really interesting thing about that poll is a lot of Labour MPs in the West Midlands, a lot of the sort of that kind of Birmingham collective, have been going, I like Sean, but it's really tight. It feels basically level in the polls. And
after the, I should say, after the first round, it was level.
But the,
it is the transfer.
But when that poll came out, one of them texted me and they said, what they realised when it came out is they said, I've just got so used to fighting first past the post elections. I've looked at my own sort of data and of course that's right. Right? Of course he's winning in quite a big way. And then you start thinking about the transfers issue elsewhere and you think, well, are the Tories going to win on transfers in Tees Valley where they might win on the first round? No. Are they going to win in the West of England on transfers? Not unless the Lib Dems, unless everyone gets about a third of the vote in you know, and the Lib Dems go out first, right? So I think the West of England is a fun example of where I imagine you could get a different winner depending on who went out, who comes third at every different time, and there will be not much between them.
I've heard that one described as potentially a three-way marginal. Do you think that's true?
Stephen Williams has got a fairly large personal following, because obviously, like all Lib Dem MPs, he's pointed at more bins than I've had hot dinners.
Yeah, they put in the hours.
So he will, and he'll get a good vote out of Bristol, and also there's a good sort of residual Lib Dem vote out of the rural parts of that mayoralty. Labour, of course, will hope to do well out of Bristol, and the Tories will do well out of the more affluent, sort of the bluer bits of Bristol and the surrounding rural bits. So anyone could, you know, kind of the first to third order there is anyone's guess. Obviously, if the Lib Dems come third, that vote will go in both different directions. Either could win. If the Tories come third, you assume the Lib Dems win. If Labour comes third, you assume the Lib Dems will. Yeah, so there are lots of permutations where someone else could win because of the transfers. I also think the other interesting thing in the West of England is because we use IRV, not AV, for our runoff voting system, so you get two votes, one your first and your second preference.
What does our AV is alternative vote?
And instant runoff. No. So you basically have instead of doing the French thing, you have your first runoff, then your first round, then a week where everyone campaigns, and a second. You go, here's my first choice, here's my second. Now, in, say, the London mayoralty, that's fairly easy for people to vote in a way which gets the most out of their preferences, right? So you vote for your preferred choice, and then you vote for the one you least dislike out of Labour and Conservative. If you're in the West of England, and your first choice is Green, it's not clear who you vote for as your second preference if you want to stop the Conservatives. Do you do it for Labour? Do you do it for the Liberal Democrats? Depending on the order and people go out, those two vote, yeah.
Because the second preference for a third placed candidate is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It just doesn't get counted.
So, I mean, yeah, so there are many. Wow, this is my coolest appearance on your podcast. There are many
reasons. Very cool podcast, Stephen.
Why IRV is the worst of the preferential voting systems. And I think the West of England will be a really good example of that. There will be a lot, I think, of wasted votes where people have cast a perfectly sensible second preference and won't be counted.
What's like Lib Dem, Green, or
no? So like Green, if you're sort of
So
if you cast Green Lib Dem or Green Labour, and then Labour or the Lib Dems goes out in the same round as you, well, that was a perfectly sensible way of voting tactically anti-conservative.
But it could let the Tories.
But it could let the Tories in, right?
Let's move the conversation on, because I'm still slightly baffled by the idea that somewhere you have a ranked list of your favourite preferential voting systems. Let's continue our little tour. So Tees Valley, mm-hmm. Which is the sort of Middlesbrough, Hartlepool, Darlington one.
Redcar.
Yeah. I heard late last week that Labour are crapping themselves about that one.
Well, they did lose that council bar election.
Yeah, I mean, that really should be. Labour should have like a 10-15 point advantage up there, right?
Isn't the Lib Dems have a surprisingly resilient councillor base up there? They are either the official opposition or a third party within a whisker of being the official opposition on most of those councils, and held Redcar in the last parliament.
It is one of the places where Labour's hegemony looks more hegemonic because of first past the post than it actually is. Although, once again, in Tees Valley, so I was calling some people around, going, you know, how is it looking down there? And a lot of people are saying that our vote is not very enthused, and the Conservatives around here will always vote. So they're nervous about that, obviously. The fact that now everyone's going to have to vote twice in 1 year means that they're more nervous than the electorate will get, you know, smaller and therefore more conservative. However, it comes back to Andy Street's problem. Where are the transfers going to come for, I can't even tell you what the name of the Conservative candidate in Tees Valley is.
Ben Moonstone, I think.
Seems legit.
Labour is Sue Jeffrey. I think another reason for thinking that Labour might lose the Tees Valley, in fact, is that Labour has an appallingly bad record of managing to elect women to anything significant.
I mean, 100 so the MPs in Westminster, they do a little governing there.
But, you know, as individuals, rather than just, like, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm being paranoid, but, like, we've had the conversation before about how the mayoral elections have turned out a bit blokey, as is this podcast. Oh, Stephanie, how we miss you. But nonetheless, like, the fact that, like, the one woman who seemed likely to win it now might not win does sort of seem in keeping with that debate.
Labour's Leslie Mansell might win.
She won't, though, will she?
She could. I think the fascinating thing, and I know I've said this on this podcast before, is all of these mayoralties have a large city that you kind of think of as the heart, perhaps not geographically, but actually of the... And mostly cities have been more able to preserve a functioning local paper, right? So if you live in Bristol, that election is actually getting decent, proper coverage. Less so for the rest of the constituency. So if you have a situation where turnout is just twice as high in Bristol, then suddenly it is just a Lib Lab fight with, you know, some Tories in the country bits being...
But I mean,
fairly incidental.
Bristol also elected a mayor last year, so isn't that going to confuse people? If, like, something like, hey, we're electing another mayor.
Yeah, I think, yeah, who knows? They'll be interesting. I'm not sure how low turnout will be. The fact that it is unseasonably and kind of from a climate change perspective terrifyingly warm this year, I think will be a factor in both the mayorals and the general election, right? It's already at that stage where you're kind of feeling... Oh, do I really have to work? Couldn't I just go outside and lie in the sun?
Yeah.
Which is not good if you want to win an election. Anyway.
Okay, let's finish our tour.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, Manchester, we still think Burnham's probably got it in the bag, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, difficult. It's difficult to see any other.
He said he's not going to stand for his parliamentary seat now. So, if anything can ruin Andy Burnham's chances, it's quitting his existing job. But yeah, he's still a favourite, right?
It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, the Manchester Gorton by election has been moved. The sort of Lib Dems' hope of a big juicy surge have been sort of torpedoed a little bit. I think both Lib Dems and Tories will do well enough, but as we said, it's the transfers issue. Where are Sean Anstey's transfers coming from? The answer is,
yeah, no one's nowhere. Going to Tory as a second preference. Okay, Liverpool, obviously Steve Rotherham.
Steve Rotherham, although, I mean, the caveat when the Lib Dems brief something is, you know, the Lib Dems were briefing that they were in with a chance of winning Stoke-on-Trent Central, so it's important to take whatever the Lib Dems brief with a skipload of salt.
Are you saying that the Liberal Democrats would lie about something?
Well, no, I mean, their approach to graphs proves they're nothing other than incredibly faithful to statistics. Anyway, but they're briefing that Rotherham is rattled by both the low turnout and also by their candidate, Carl Cashman. Apparently Rotherham's been knocking him for being 23, which actually is a fairly valid criticism if you want to be the mayor of the Liverpool City region.
Yeah.
But the Lib Dems are saying, oh, he wouldn't be making that argument if he wasn't spooked.
But Steve has decided...
He would, though. I mean, yeah. I come up with, you know, I would tell him to piss off and finish his geography homework, to be honest.
Steve has decided to fight that election as if it's a marginal for a couple of reasons. One, by fighting it as a marginal, it G's everyone up. Well, I mean, they thought it G'd everyone up for voter ID for a general election, which was some way off. But obviously Labour has two very tough fights on its hands in Liverpool City region, in
Rural West
and Rural South. So it makes sense to fight it like a marginal. But yeah, also, to alienate yet more Skylines listeners, it's perfectly legitimate to say, like, come back when you need to shave, mate. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he is very fresh-faced, Carl Cashman. I don't know what his shaving regime is.
Talking of fresh-faced young politicos, what do we make of the rumour this afternoon that Seb Corbyn might be running for Liverpool Wharton, which is Steve Rotherham's old seat?
Not going to happen.
Yeah, one word. Starts with B, rhymes with bollocks, and is bollocks.
I don't think bollocks rhymes with bollocks. I don't think that's how...
I mean, bollocks. You literally did just rhyme it there.
I'm going to, you know, if it wasn't the NEC who were deciding this, I'd say if it was a Corbyn... Anderson fight, I would say Corbyn wouldn't be a total no-hoper. I think he could win a vote in the CLP.
The other name being floated is Joe Anderson, the mayor of Liverpool City proper rather than City Region, is Joe Anderson, who is basically desperate for a pension plan because he's going to be pointless soon.
In terms of the seats where they are vacant for a variety of reasons, a lot of those are because, you know, if you're Rob Maris, you've got a majority of 801, you've decided actually... You're all right, thanks. I don't fancy going down, you know, with another defeat. But the other sort of factor in that is in the NEC officers, of whom there are eight, Jeremy Corbyn, Tom Watson, and six officers of various affiliated unions, will ultimately pick the candidates for all of those seats. So in practice, what will happen is the big unions will have a fight, Unite will get to pick one. So there are four at the moment, right? So obviously Unite gets one, GMB gets one, Unison goes, hey, we're relevant too, they get one. And then everyone has an almighty fight over the fourth. There is no way... So in terms of Unite's priority list, there are lots of people who have done well for Unite who they'd like to get seats for. Their number one slot's not going to be Seb Corbyn. GMB's number one slot isn't going to be Seb Corbyn. Unison, I mean, he's not a Unison member. Unison doesn't represent parliamentary citizens. Unison's number one slot is not going to be the kind of, you know, the CWU, who were the other union making up the panel, they're not going to go, oh, yeah, do you know what we want to put? It's a nonsense story. I have no idea where it's coming from.
Where are they on Joe Anderson is what I want to know. Is he likely to get the seat?
I don't know that much about Joe Anderson's sort of union game, but I think it's a sort of fairly predictable quid pro quo, you think? You know, I'm not going to make Steve Rotherham's life difficult by clinging on as the leader of Liverpool City Council with my own democratic mandate. I'll go to Walton and make lots of noise there and get out of your hair, I think is the subtext there.
Yeah, I think it feels... Because I think if someone from Corbyn's inner circle does get Liverpool Walton, it will be... Carrie Murphy, his office manager, close personal associate of Len McCluskey, formerly worked for Tom Watson, although now obviously estranged. It's difficult for council leaders to be selected because council leaders, mayors, etc., because they've been having the cuts devolved to them for so long now.
And Anderson is especially unpopular for that. I mean, this is my unscientific sample of Liverpool Twitter before, the responses were not suitable for a family podcast.
Okay, let's move on. Just in the name of completism, we should talk about Peterborough and Cambridgeshire. It was going to be a Tory victory. It's still going to be a Tory victory. No change there, right?
No. Again, the interesting thing in terms of...
Anything interesting to say about that one?
So there are a couple of interesting things about Peterborough and Cambridgeshire. One is what happens in Peterborough, right? The bigger the Tory vote out of there, the more chance than Stuart Jackson Conservative MP for Peterborough since 2005 will remain the Conservative MP for that marginal seat. The other, of course, is what the Lib Dems do in Cambridge and its surrounding areas. So the more that, to be honest, is a mayoralty, which I would say is primarily interesting because of what it tells us about the general election.
And that'll be, hello again, Julian Hilpert.
Yeah.
Okay, so to circle back round to our initial theme, what does the fact we're now having a general election, like, you know, what is it, 35 days after? Yeah, exactly 5 weeks after these mayoral elections, not having a general election. What's that going to do? What do you reckon that'll do to turn out, first off?
I mean, this is feels like a cop-out answer, but it's true. The insufficient data. So Thatcher went to the country quite a lot in June, didn't she? Was 83 in June?
I think it might have been.
I think 87 was also in June, so. Right? To be honest, I'm sorry, I should have looked this up. I don't know what turnout was in the 83 and 87 local elections. However, I think, and again, I may be wrong, but 87 is one of the few times when the government has not lost seats in the local elections. So there are two things that suggest. One, that turnout was lower when the electorate gets more old and therefore more conservative. Or it means that people get into a general election mode sooner and therefore they are more likely to vote.
See, my grand unifying theory on this is that there are going to be people who turn up to vote thinking it's general election day just because they've got a vague idea something political is going on.
Really, do you think?
Yeah, I reckon.
What, a month early?
Yeah, why not? Right, are you voting? Oh, I better get to the polling today.
Yeah, there. Well, in that case, the Tory landslide, surely.
Yeah, that's fine. So, last of all, what do we think the general election is going to do to the amount of attention these mayoral elections get? Because, I mean, my instinct is a lot more people are going to be getting on the train to Birmingham because it's kind of quite a nice sort of bellwether story.
Yeah, well, there is the sort of... One, there's the Festival of Democracy argument, right? And the, you know, that people will be engaged, but will they necessarily be engaged on a municipal level? And what you say about media attention is also true, but obviously no one's going to be going up to the Tees Valley, are they? It will make I think the upshot of this will be that the West Midlands mayoralty will remain the sexiest electoral contest, and the rest will sort of slip slowly into the mood music of their respective local authorities.
Yeah, I mean, that's my instinct, is we're probably going to hear a lot more about the West Midlands, but no one's going to pay the slightest attention.
Yeah, especially, look, given that, you know, Gisela Stewart stood down, Jess Phillips is at risk of losing a seat if the Dems are resurgent.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting local stories. But, I mean, I kind of think this is how... It's all going to be reported through the prism of national politics.
Of what
right?
does it mean?
What does this mean for next month?
As Stephen says, it's a valuable curtain raiser, and it's, you know, maybe it'll... You know, impact the trajectory of the individual campaigns. Maybe, you know, we'll see Farron knee slide across the Clifton suspension bridge when Stephen Williams win, and you know, then the Tories go into panic mode,
awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Oh, right. So I've looked it up. Turnout. You don't care, do you?
I do.
He laughed at me.
Yeah, I'm just debating whether to cut this bit. But go on, have your little moment.
The 1987 local election turnout was higher than the surrounding years. So actually having a local election before a general election did not, and again 11th of June, so a very similar kind of, you know, swallowed up in the amorphous lump. So I think it means there will be more, you know, as a boring old history person, I think then the past is generally a good guide to the future.
A higher turnout favours the Tories, right? Is that what I'm thinking?
Well, I think
in any other contest, right? In any other voting system contest,
higher turnout does suggest. Well, no. So the thing is about higher turnout, about increasing and decreasing turnout, is you get to an absolute floor when the electorate becomes quite Remain-y but quite conservative. But actually, mostly, so we saw this with the referendum, where more young people voted than have at any point in British history, but more old people voted than. So you can never really increase your own turnout without increasing the other fellas, right? But the big sort of variable in all of that is that what tends to happen when people vote in local elections, not in election years, is they go, I'm going to send a message of general discontent with the government. If they are voting on general election day, what happens is they go, who do I want to run the country? And then they vote all that way, all the way down, which is why the Lib Dems have tended to do worse on general election days. So the interesting question is, if people vote more because they're in election mood, does that mean that they will vote for whichever party they want to run the country? So that was a very long way of saying, yes, it will, I imagine, help the Tories, but not because the turnout will be up, but because people will be picking a government, not voting on local records or going, the boss, time for a free two fingers to her.
Okay, well, 2 weeks to go. We'll know soon enough.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.